Welcome to the Gooder Podcast, where we talk with powerhouse women in CPG about their journeys to success. This episode is sponsored by Retail Voodoo, a brand development firm guiding mission-driven consumer brands to attract new and passionate consumer base, crush their categories through growth and innovation, and magnify their social and environmental impact. If your brand is in need of brand positioning, package design, or marketing activation, we are here to help. You can find more information at www.retail-voodoo.com.
Well, hello. Hello, Diana Frake here. I am the host of the Gooder Podcast, where I get to talk with a powerhouse women in the food, beverage, and wellness categories about their journeys to success and their insights on the industry. This episode is brought to you by Retail Voodoo, a brand development firm. Our clients include Starbucks, Kind, REI, PepsiCo, Hi-Ke, and many other market leaders. We provide strategic brand and design for services for leading brands in these industries. If your goal is to increase market share, drive growth, or disrupt the marketplace with new and innovative ideas, give us a call and let's talk. You can find out more at retail-voodoo.com. All right. Well, today I get to introduce you to Nina Takarazzi, who is founder and CEO of Nadi, a certified women-owned enterprise and social venture with a mission to create jobs for displaced refugees. Nadi, it is Nadi, correct?
Yes.
Yes, produces organic juices and healthy snacks that are sold in grocery stores, supermarkets across the U.S. Nadi's products are inspired by ancient Georgian health traditions and old family recipes. Now, Nina is a native of the country of Georgia, where she founded the Georgia to Georgia Foundation, a nonprofit that promotes relationships between the state of Georgia and the country of Georgia. She is also co-chair of the Atlanta Tbilisi. Did I get that one right?
Yes.
Oh, I'm getting good. Okay. Which is a sister city committee. She is also a certified sommelier. Hello, that is cool. And we're going to learn a little bit more about that. Well, welcome, Miss Nina. How are you today?
Hi, I'm good. I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. Where are you located?
I'm in Atlanta, Georgia.
In Atlanta. Oh, who did I talk to yesterday that was from Atlanta? Mm-hmm. Oh, Christine Jackson from, oh my goodness, Baby Puffs.
Oh.
I can't remember the name of it. Forgive me, Christina. Okay. I'll remember by the end of this episode and bring her back up. But to Atlanta's, that's gotta be good. I love it.
Yeah. And I'm all about Georgia. I went from Georgia to Georgia.
So. Georgia to Georgia. Well, quite different. Quite different.
Yeah.
Well, hey, I really like it when brands, before we get to start talking about your background, I really like it when brand owners like yourself can tell us a little bit about their brand. Would you mind telling us about Nadi and why it exists?
Yes, of course. Happy to. I started Nadi with several friends with a true concern and passion of how we could help displaced refugees in my country after the war with Russia in 2008. Mm-hmm. We simply wanted to help create jobs so these people felt that they can take care of their families and, you know, and have their pride back. We just inclined to, you know, go into the, hold on, let me start this over.
Yeah.
It's hard because it was started with so many, like,
I know,
different ways.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, there is another side which is a little bit more exciting and not so dreadful.
This is your story, so you get to share what is important to you.
Yes, yes. Okay, so I'll start. Okay, so we started Nadi with several friends. They were all from my country, Georgia, where we identified a concern for the displaced refugees, which we had quite a bit due to the turmoil and wars that my country, Georgia, went through with Russia in 2008. We knew that we wanted to help, but we were not sure exactly what we could do. Mm-hmm. And one of the ideas was something that me and my friend George, who started this company, were always wanted to do, is that we wanted to test our grandparents' grandmother's recipes against each other.
Oh, really?
Yes. So we were like, okay, my grandma made better roasted juice. No, my grandma. So it was kind of like on and on forever. So we figured most of these refugees happened to be farmers and they knew a lot about this plant, and it's not easiest plant to work with. But I knew that to be successful on the US market, mm-hmm. you have to have something very unique, mm-hmm. and you have to have some type of funding and a purpose so that you are heard, and you inspire. Those three things for me were vital. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have the funding, but we had a lot of passion. We had unique product. And we just said, let's just start. It doesn't matter how big, how little, let's just do what we can. And obviously, you're not going to hire people right away. So you had to create demand. You had to create sales. Mm-hmm. And it really was just going for it, figuring out and learning processes. But little by little, this company has become such an amazing part of my life because mm-hmm. it ties in so many of things and qualities that I love mm-hmm. about what I do every day. Mm-hmm. So I'm so glad I took the risks. I'm so glad that I worked so hard. Now we do have quite a bit of full-time employees who are refugees. We also do a lot for community. So little by little, we're going to get our dream, and hopefully we'll be able to create a lot of jobs for people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Very, I can assume that right now, because of what's happening in Ukraine, that there's some sort of emotional connection going on right now with the Ukrainians, and I'm sure with the Georgians, different circumstances, similar circumstances. It's like a different enterprise than most people, right? This is a social entrepreneur type of program, right? You're going into the business not because you've decided you found this great idea and you're going to make $1 jillion. Yes. The goal at the end of the day is actually bigger than the financial rewards that come at the end of this. Do you need to make money? Yes, because you need the money to finance and invest against your desires. Is it difficult to separate the emotion from the tactical when you are working on a project like this? I feel like that's such a bonehead question.
No. I totally get what you're asking. So this particular situation with Ukraine definitely affected us mm-hmm. on a human level, on mm-hmm. a personal level, mm-hmm. but also on a day-to-day financial level. Mm-hmm. Our bottling factory was in Kiev.
Oh,
so as a small business, you anticipate many things. Mm-hmm. You jump over many hurdles mm-hmm. and you think you are amazing for creating new solutions. Mm-hmm. There's only so much you can do with the war. I don't think you can really prepare for it. So we lost a lot of inventory. We lost a lot of time because mm-hmm. this was not something we had prepared for. Mm-hmm. I learned very well that turns out I'm incredibly professional and good at crisis mode. Oh. And once the crisis settles, I realize that I just lose. Yes. And then it hits me.
Yeah.
So that passion and dedication that me and my team have for this company, mm-hmm. it was amazing how much we had to put aside the emotional mm-hmm. and figure out what we're good at. And mm-hmm. we're good at solving massive problems. And we did it within 3 weeks of destroyed factory.
Wow.
We found a partner in Turkey. Mm-hmm. We found just enough finances and support from friends to be able to do this. And it's not the easiest thing to get a corporation or a manufacturing to start running your product in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And So I feel like we had to do that. We had to divide up our emotions, our mental state, and solve the problem at hand. And once we did, then we could all of a sudden realize that, oh my gosh, this is where we come in. This is what we can do. We know what to do and how to help refugees. Mm-hmm. You know, we know how to raise money. We know how mm-hmm. they need housing, how much they need cars, not just cars, but they need trucks. Like all of a sudden we started understanding that, oh my gosh, everything that we've learned through our own experience in 2008 and from then on, now we can help others. Mm-hmm. So that's been an amazing journey to become a resource for others. And once again, you have to divide it up. But that passion and that mental state is what drives you to figure things out.
Yeah. That's amazing. I'm having a moment here in my head. My father's family, my father had me when he was quite older, but my father's family, my father was a Holocaust survivor. He lived, in Central Europe during World War II and was shipped out to the outskirts, and he had the star and the whole bit, and survived. But when we were kids living here, of course, in the US, we took through a lot of families that were refugees from different countries, mostly through Central Europe. And it's just dawning on me, listening to what you're hearing, that it's not just the passion to help, but that you know the connection mm-hmm. to these people is different. It's not yeah. about helping, really. I mean, it is about helping, but it's like you understand what's happening up here. You understand what's happening in the heart and the head and everything. Yeah. And I hadn't thought about it that way before. So thank you for sharing that. Yeah.
So I think after all of this, I told my team, I don't think I'll be scared of anything anymore.
Wow.
So bring it on.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. That's an amazing statement right there. Okay. So when you were going through the beginning parts of this venture, when did you know that you were going in the right direction? When did you know this? Yeah, this is the right idea. This is the right product. This is the right.
Yeah, 100%. I know exactly when. When we brought in our first, we could not afford to bring a whole container. So we brought in half a container, which later we learned was very silly to do because you end up paying for the full transportation.
Yeah.
But we did it, and we went to Miami to a food expo. And I've done a lot of expos in my life due to having a career in marketing. Mm. So I thought I was going to be a pro. I know how to do, you know, flyers and the banners and, you know,
yes.
promo items and, mm-hmm. you know, everything. So I had that all down. And we go into this expo, and I told myself, okay, you're going to count how many people hate your juice. And see what the reaction is, and you're going to be honest with yourself that if people don't like it, you're not going to do this.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So me and my sister and my cousin, we started, you know, serving the juice as people walked by, and people were ordering, and some people were asking if I can buy some here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at that time, maybe we sampled over 500 people. And we had one person that said that she didn't like it. Out of all of them. So I looked at my girls and I was like, oh my God, we are golden to have so many personalities just walk yep. by without knowing us.
Yep.
Not really knowing our mission,
mm-hmm.
not knowing what Rosehip is at all, you know, to try it and simply like the taste.
Mm-hmm.
That was important because as a social venture, people will buy your product one time because they feel sorry or compassion or right. they feel like they're going to be part of some kind of good story.
Yeah.
But if your product doesn't taste good, they're not coming back.
Yeah. No velocities. So yeah, one and done.
That's the end of that relationship. So we knew that our product had to be very, very high quality. And I'll tell you this, that in my country, it's not the easiest thing to produce an USDA organic product. There are only very few of us. I think we may be the second drink in the whole country that has that kind of certification.
Really? So
yes. We were first, and then there's another one, I think, now. But it was vital for us to bring to this country a product that was high quality, that was certified organic, and we would take that market share at once.
Really?
Yes. I mean, there is no other roasted juice on the market at all.
Well, I'm in my head. I'm over here. I wrote down here in my notes. I'm like, we didn't actually circle back to find out which grandma recipe won.
Neither. It turns out, it turns out that our grandmas loved sugar. So we were very disappointed, and we had to quickly figure out how to make this healthy, because I definitely wanted this to be healthy. And rose tips, so I can tell you a little bit about why it's so important that I started this particular drink.
Yeah, please.
Yes. So rose tips have one of the highest concentration of vitamin C.
Hmm.
They have barely any fructose. I've been told that there is almost no fructose at all.
Interesting.
So you have this fruit that people for centuries have been drinking as a tea, eating as a jam, I mean, making into a soup in Switzerland, so that they would get vitamin C, which is so important for immunity. And this was something that my grandma would make me drink every day, before tennis, after tennis, before school. Oh, you have a headache, get rose tip juice. You know, your stomach hurts, get rose tip juice. So when we started this, I was like, I'm going to do a lot of research. And I asked a lot of my friends and a lot of professional researchers to dive in and really get on the bottom of this. Was grandma right? Or this was like my country thing? And turns out they were very much right. It has so many health benefits.
Hmm.
We were mesmerized. Like, it just has so many health health benefits. And that was very important to showcase when you're bringing something new to the market. So to dilute that with water, with with sugar. Or anything else, I would just do everything possible not to do that. So none of the recipes worked. We had our own.
Poor grandma.
But it was a good experiment.
Yeah. Well, so let's talk a little bit about, you know, rosehip is new for the average American. I'm not going to say for the immigrant audience, but for those of us that are in second and third generation Americans or older, how are you finding introducing this product versus the social side when you're talking to somebody who's net new? Do you just focus on the flavor, or talk a little bit about how you're positioning the product to the average American consumer?
Yes, absolutely. I think it's very important where you are physically located.
I see.
And yes, and what the atmosphere is when you are discussing the product.
I see.
If you are in a store doing a demo, you probably don't want to take up too much time, because they're you know, coming in to do certain things. So you want them to at least hear rosehip, at least get curious about rosehip, and maybe take a sip. But if you are at an expo where people are expected to be there for the purpose of discovering something new, then we usually say a little bit about the rosehip benefits. But I also have this thing that I don't want to use our core mission for the purposes of marketing. I'm very careful about this.
Okay.
Even though it's a smart thing to do, and I know many, many companies that will do that.
Yes.
Or they'll say 5% here, 10% here. Yeah. You know, it's wonderful. I want everybody to do it. But I don't want to use it. I want to tell the story, and the story takes sometimes a long time. Because nobody at a nice, happy expo wants to hear about the war and tragedy,
right?
So we try to be delicate about it, and we, you know, give resources where they can read more about it. Mm-hmm. But we try to concentrate all of our products on the product. And I do like to highlight that it's a women-owned business.
Mm-hmm.
But usually that's about it. We don't, unless they ask, then I can sit there all day and talk about it.
Yeah. I understand. Now, when we're looking back, you know, all young brands or younger brands, and I think I always call basically anything under about 10 years, I always consider a pretty young brand. There's a lot of experiences and growth. And as you're looking back at some of those choices that you made, like the container being one of them, are there any Is there any one experience where you and the team made a move and looking back, you're like, that was a bonehead move, but it made us look at the opportunity like this and it helped us accelerate to where we are now?
I mean, as a small business, you probably have those moments every week. I mean, I've had like aha moment about the box. I think this one was unique. So we brought in, we were trying to make sure that we fit as much product as we can when you bring containers, because they're quite, we thought they were quite expensive. Now they're very expensive.
Yeah.
Now it's unbelievable. So we decided that we're going to have each case with 20 bottles. And okay. They're little bottles. So that way we want some space, you know, we could do more. So our brilliant idea. So one time we're reviewing sales. I think it was with Unify, and they're telling me, oh, you sold only, you know, 120 cases in this PC. You only sold 100 here, whatever. And I'm like so disappointed, you know, thinking, wow, like I thought it was so much more, you know, and they don't really give you full data. So you're always kind of guessing. So we got off the call and I started doing my little math and I'm like, something is just not right. I really have a lot less product.
Yeah.
And then it hit me that everything that you do in this industry is per case. It's not per bottle. It's not everything they count is per case. So my 20 bottle case is same thing as somebody's six pack.
So right.
Like, hold on a minute. If I have a six pack, does this mean I just sold 600 or what?
Yeah. Right.
So I called the Unify manager back and I said, tell me a little bit more about the cases and why it's counted that way. And she said, oh, everything in this business is per case. I said, okay, my next container is going to have six packs.
She goes, good.
And you'll be light and easier to carry. I'm like, yes.
Yes.
That was definitely one of those aha moments that you just learned by complete mistake. So,
oh, that is,
yeah,
it's yes. Right. It's a series of that. We have worked with so many entrepreneurs of all sizes, you know, and ones that are quite large. And we hear these stories all the time. I think they're fascinating. Because somebody could have told you that 100 times, but it wasn't until you ran into it that you're like, oh, now it sticks. Now I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. It was an aha moment for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, when we met over LinkedIn, love the LinkedIn, a while ago, and then met up at Expo West. And when you and I met at Expo West, you introduced me to this amazing set of women, one of whom included Sophia Maroon, who I have also interviewed from Dress It Up Dressing. And you guys have like a special kind of unit going on there. Can you share a little bit more about your group, why you formed, and what it is that you're up to?
Absolutely. I would love to. So about 15 small companies, women-owned companies, were chosen as winners of Stacy's Chips.
Stacy's Rise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it was by PepsiCo. And 15 of us won this amazing award. And for a couple of months, we were mentored and coached and opened up amazing opportunities for us and relationships. But one very, very unique thing that they did is that they divided 15 girls into teams.
I see.
And they put us in one team. And I would hear constantly from everybody at the discussions that, oh, you know, I don't have time to meet so much. I don't know these people. I'm not going to just start socializing, whatever. So when it came to my team, I was like, girls, we're going to do this. Like, we're going to be a kick-ass amazing team. So they're like, yeah, like, do you have time for this? I'm like, we're going to make time for this. It's going to be Friday, every Friday. And we like laughed at ourselves, but we have never missed a Friday since. And it's been like a year and a half.
Oh my goodness.
It was whoever did this at Pepsi and put these us together was brilliant because we balance each other perfectly. And we are like always thinking about how to help each other. I don't know how many nights I've stayed up searching to see how to do service provider, you know, to help, you know, Sophia figure out how to get out of her, whatever. Yeah. I mean, all the time we were looking after each other. And that was really because we were able to talk about the real problems when we were on, you know, we didn't talk about like, you know, some kind of top level stuff. This was down to like, oh my God, my bottles are breaking. How are you guys packing yours? Okay, this way, you know, try this, try that. You know, how's your 3PL? You know, what is your Amazon? I mean, so it was like all of a sudden having four brilliant minds thinking with you. And that's different than your team because your own team has their own ideas, their own, but they don't come from that same pain that you are feeling as a founder. So it's just been really unique. I mean, I love these girls so much. They're going to come here for the WBNC. So I'm so excited.
Oh, that's in June, right?
Yes. June 7th through 9th. So, yes. And it's been very unique. It's been wonderful. I will tell you though, this is very rare that five people can really commit to something for this long unless they are getting benefit out of it. And I think we help each other so much. That it's been beneficial, but I have been in so many other groups and, you know, chats and whatever that it's chaotic. It's not, it's purposeless. And then you drop people off very fast. So we've been very fortunate.
Well, I think it makes sense when you're working with people outside of your organization. You know, when you're working with your own team, and I find this to be true with me and my business partner, David, is you're in your own stew, so to speak, right? And so when you're working through a problem, first of all, everybody has a vested interest in the outcome, and it's very hard to operate on yourself if you have to do anything significant. And also, I don't know if you find this, but oftentimes we don't do a great job of celebrating either because we're so focused on the next task and the next thing. And having this outsiders group who's like going, listen, Nina, I don't know what you're thinking of, but like blank, blank, and blank. Somebody who can talk to you in your language, but can see from the outside and can be like that somewhat of a consultant, but that knows you personally, I think super valuable, super valuable.
And you mentioned a good point about celebrations. I do so much alone that, yes, I get happy when we get into some supermarket, but I often... because my team is in different countries, often they don't really know what it means to get into the fresh market. You know, or, you know, Sprouts or whatever. So they're like, oh, yeah, good. What does this mean? You know, so when one of our girls got into Target, I think it was like a Wednesday or Tuesday. So we all texted. We're like, okay, we're going to do a champagne celebration. And and it was really cool. We all celebrated. So that's to take time and really, and actually Sophia is the one that always tells us this, that we have to take time and celebrate each milestone. Because, I mean, there are many little ones, but each one took us so long and such hard work.
Well, and I will say that it's very true of entrepreneurs to mitigate the wins, or not mitigate, downplay the wins and focus on the things that are broken or need to be taken care of next, because we're kind of trained to do that. Super. And I think this COVID thing personally, while it, a lot of people feel like I can live my best life in this, and I don't have to commute anymore. Those are all amazing benefits. But I think this lack of connecting
with
people, I think I personally, I'm no sociologist or anthropologist. I just see what I see. But I personally think that in 2 or 3 years of this, we're going to have, I think mental illness is actually going to go way up. You cannot operate in a void for years at a time. We're social animals.
We need this support too. I mean, people think that, you know, this word entrepreneur, like people think it's so exotic and, you know, one time I was loading some stuff with my poor father, bless his heart. Like, you know, he went with me to warehouse and we're dragging these boxes around and, you know, my hands are all shaking and they're so blue. And this young guy walks by me and he goes, whose product is this? I said, mine. And he said, that's so cool. That's like awesome, you know, whatever. And I'm looking at him, and I'm like, this is so not sexy right now. You have no idea. I'm like, don't let anybody tell you that entrepreneurship is like is anything to do with fun or, you know, or easy. Well, nothing is easy in this place. So you have to consciously understand that you love what you're doing.
Yes.
And then make it fun.
Yes. You
know? And these kinds of relationships, like with Pepsi Girls, those are so important.
Yeah.
Because you're so alone in this.
Yeah.
No matter how many people you have on your team.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, I always hear this, oh, you're an entrepreneur. I'm like, for me, that means like, you know, neither you know my pain or you don't. But there is there's very few rewards.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the rewards are different. We're masochists. Let's be honest.
That's a good way to say it. I've been trying to avoid.
We enjoy our pain. Something about it.
I know. Sometimes it's so at the point where it's, you know, you have to question everything from religion to purpose. You know, after 19 hours of work, I didn't even know there were 19 hours in a day. You know, but when you do it every day, you're like, wow, it turns out humans don't need sleep, don't need to eat.
You know? You really don't. You really don't. I'm in school right now, so I am living that dream. This entire week, I've had 4 hours of sleep every night between work and school. So I get it.
But I think it's important. Like, I feel like when I went into this business, no matter how I thought about a business or social venture or whatever, mm-hmm. I really didn't have people around me that had done anything like this. Actually, mm-hmm. I didn't know anybody in CPG world at all. I didn't even know CPG before. I had to Google it. So I didn't have anyone that came up and said, this is going to be hard. Are you sure you want to do this? Like, here are the things that are going to be really hard. Mm-hmm. And I would have probably said, oh my God, it's okay. Like, I'm so excited, you know, whatever. But nobody really tells you the pains. Everybody mm-hmm. tells you how so-and-so in 10 mm-hmm. years became va-va-voom, how so-and-so sold juice in like 5 years.
And right.
You hear all these things, but the reality of it is that that's probably 1% of all of
them. Right.
And it's really hard. And like, I always tell myself, Nina, none of this is going to be easy, but this is what you want and you really want it.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no turning back.
You know, it's a calling.
Yes,
100%. You know what I mean? It's like there's something that is calling you to do this work. I get that. Yeah, I get it. Yeah,
and it helps that it's social venture. It helps because you can't be late. Other people depend on you. You cannot be late.
You cannot. Yeah, that's the truth. And the larger you get, the more and more people depend on you. Yeah. Well, so when you we were talking before we started recording, you were talking about some things that you could pass on to other women or other entrepreneurs in business, kind of like some advice about how different ways that we can show up. Like, I think that one of the things that we said is it feels like women in business are expected to show up a particular way. And my example was, oh yeah, I'm doing some interviews and I was doing some reference calls, and the first thing everybody said was how amazingly wonderful this person was to work with. And it was like 5 minutes of that, which is fantastic. But I also have a need for them to help me with my mission and with our goals and that sort of thing. So when people come to you for advice, maybe even particularly other women, what is it that you share with them, or what is it that you'd want to share with them?
Yeah, I mean, watching in this industry, and I'm also in several other industries, one thing that I am very disappointed in is that we women tend to treat each other more as women than men treat us in many ways.
Mm-hmm.
Hope you'll understand this correctly, but I've never had a man at a conference or at a networking place come and tell me, oh my God, you have 3 kids. How come you're here at 9 p.m.? Is this easy for you? Is this hard? But you will have, you will be talking about business with a couple of guys and girls, and a woman will walk up and say, oh my God, you have 3 kids, you know? Wow, you're here, you know? I'm like, why are you telling me this? Mm-hmm. Tell the guy this. He probably mm-hmm. has 2 kids or 3,
mm-hmm.
you know? Like, I hate that we put ourselves in a place that I'm a hero because I'm a mom. Then they're going to look at you as, oh, okay, you know, she's, you know, like, yes, I'm a mom. Yes, I have a career. Yes, I have my business. But the core reason why I come to networks and why I listen to podcasts and stuff, I want solutions. I want to know more people. I want solutions. I want to figure things out. I don't want to be like, you know, looked at like this sensitive whatever that I just achieved golden thing because I am somewhere at 9 p.m.
Yeah.
You know, and those are little things that I wish us women would take a little bit more care and really pull each other up. I know we say this all the time. But like even conferences that we set up for women always have to have these emotional things in it. You know, I've never gone to a normal conference where it's male and female, where it's so much about how are you feeling? How do you get along with your husband? Do you ever have time for relationships? Like what? You know, talk to your friends or cocktails about this. Here, let's do business.
Yeah.
And I feel like until we do this to ourselves, that's how we're going to be seen. You know, so little by little, I just, I always tell, and that's why I love my, you know, the Pepsi Girls, our team, is that we really treat each other as absolutely equals in all the pains. And in the difficulties of business. But yeah, I just wish we would really look at each other and really just help each other in business.
Yeah, for sure. And I can see that where, I think how I might say it is what I think I'm hearing is Nina is saying, you know, we should, as women, we should look at each other as business professionals or entrepreneurs or game changers first when we're in the environment of business and a mom second. And not in that there is a priority by way of what is more important, but there is something that what is more important in the moment. And that's what I think I'm hearing is like lean into who am I as a business owner or as an entrepreneur or as a business leader when we're here in this moment talking about business. But this man that's standing next to you also has children and a spouse or a family at home that they're caring for. And we give them opportunity to talk about it too, but it is, we're here for business, like business. And we want to care for the whole human at the same time, but let's not over index on the soft parts. Is that what I think I'm hearing?
I mean, I think so. I think just day to day, I think every woman knows the secret that we do 1,000 things more and better than men. 1,000 things.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times I've told my husband, like at home, my responsibilities are 2-page long and yours is not even close. And you're complaining, you know? So we know the secret that we, that we are miracle workers. So when I'm in a boardroom and I have 10 men sitting next to me, I don't want them to look at me and say, oh, honey, you know, don't you need to go home and fold some clothes?
Right. Oh, like, that would make us mad, wouldn't it?
Right. But then a woman tells you this in front of the board. And you're like, wow, why did you just do this?
Yeah, exactly. I
mean, and it probably comes from heart and concern.
Yes.
But in that moment, I need you to be stronger than all of these people in the world.
Yeah.
You're the only girl I've got.
Yeah.
You know, so it's weird. Like I wish that we would just elevate the partnership to the level of business, survival, how are we going to kick booty in this industry? You know, everything else can, you chose this. Nobody made you come out here and leave your kids at home. You chose this, you love it, you have a passion. So let's take this to the next level. But I don't know, I just, you know, sometimes it's just people, you know, they do what they do.
Yeah, I get it. Well, let's talk a little bit about what's next for Nadi. Now, we've talked a little bit about the juice. I know you've got, do you have a bar? Is that what it is that you have
now? I have chips. I have apple chips.
Apple chips. There we go. Oh, yes. Share that picture there. And then there we go. It's the bottle, though, that everybody needs to see. Yes, ma'am. That's it.
So that we use the one that doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, shoot. You're going to have to keep that one.
It's okay. But yeah, apple chips is a very unique way how we discovered to make these chips. With our hydration facility, we turned into a dehydration facility and we were testing some stuff and as soon as I tried first bite, I was like love at first sight. You're like, yes. Oh my God, now what do I do with this? Let's package it. Let's sell it. So one definitely big thing that came through the industry to me was that I was absolutely crazy to have two different factories, two different teams, and no funding, let me remind you. So and usually at this podcast, they make me choose because they're like, nobody can do this. Like, are you crazy?
Right.
You have juice and you have snack. Like, you know. but you know what? I mean, I don't know. For me, it was like, why not? Let's diversify.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, it's two healthy vegan products. Mm-hmm. It's hard already. I don't think it gets any harder. So for us, the future is, you know, right now we just launched another flavor of Happy Hearts apple chips. We are getting back our juices on track.
Good.
I'm taking a little bit of time to really repurpose a lot of things and rethink a lot of processes. But that's one good thing about having your own business, right? Sometimes you can pause.
Yeah.
And that's, sadly, the war in Ukraine gave us that opportunity to pause and rethink. And right now we're in the process of just rebuilding and restarting a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And really, I'm taking it easy. I have my goals that I want to achieve this year, but I'm not stressing over everything. As long as I keep my people employed, as long as we're keeping our sales going, right now it's just about rejuvenating, so to say. So mm-hmm. getting this new juices in with their new bottles, mm-hmm. relaunching everything, mm-hmm. And really also having opportunity to get chips to variety of types of customers, which mm-hmm. actually with juices, it's very much limited, as I found out. But with chips, we have demands from all over the place. So it's been kind of fun.
That is so great. I know it's really chaotic for you right now, but it's going to turn into, it always does. It turns into what it should be, right?
Yes, I believe that.
Yes. Well, Nina, I am enjoying our conversation. We have to start wrapping up, but there are a couple questions that I ask everybody. So I'll start with the first one, which is, are there any other women leaders or rising stars out there that you think are doing great things that you would like to elevate or just simply admire in public for the work that they're doing right now?
Well, I definitely, you know, I think you have mentioned already my team with the Pepsi team. They are all each individually brilliant. They all have social mission by them. You know, we have Janita's cookies. We have Dress Up with Sophia, Dress Up Dressings. You know, Maria's coffee, we have Claudia's coffee, which actually benefits farmed animals and dogs and cats. Mm. And so they all have great, great social missions, and that's important to me. But one that comes quickly to my mind is Amy Stedman, who runs Beatbox Beverages.
Okay.
She's young, she's absolutely brilliant, and kind of has become a good friend, good resource. Somebody I can count on.
Oh, nice.
Way. But I've been impressed with her innovation. And she does so much for women entrepreneurs. And
does
she's
she?
Really young. So I love it. I love,
love
it. She's
that.
Tough in a very tough industry. Alcohol is even worse than juices.
It is. Yeah, it is.
And to bring something so unique, I mean, I just love it. So. Mm. I think, you know, maybe you, if you get a chance, you should talk to her. But first, my girls first, right?
Yeah. Yes, ma'am. Yes. My next question, and so these are often related, you know, what brands or trends do you have your eye on? Is there anything out in the marketplace that you find really interesting right now?
Oh, wow. That's I am horrible at this.
Loaded question.
Yes, because I actually, which is really bad, especially with a marketing background, I actually try to avoid a little bit of market.
Okay, there you go.
Yes, I do know who my competitors are.
Yes.
But I don't want to be discouraged.
Yeah.
Because people have a lot more financing. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get off my track.
Yep.
Somebody makes it look easier or, mm-hmm. you know. So I have my goal. I have my little road that I'm going to take to get there. Yes, there are many, many good brands out there. A lot of innovation. Sadly, a lot of them don't last very long.
Yeah.
But I'm honest to God, I really just keep my eyes on the price, so to say.
Yeah,
I just want to. Yeah. And I try not to compare. Like, I have many things that are competitors. I don't compare them.
Yep.
With you. Yeah.
Cannot.
We have our own story to tell. We have our own adventure. Good luck to all of them. I will help my direct competitors any minute. There's room for everything in this country.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. And actually, it helps our industry. Mm-hmm. You know, more competitors, it helps our industry. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, so I try to get inspired by them, but not you know, don't defer, don't shift your goals, and don't try to be like someone else.
Yes,
that's my goal. Just to stay close to our mission.
Okay, I like that. Focused.
Very focused.
Wow. Well, we have been talking with Nina Tikarodze, founder. Did I get it?
You got it.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Founder and CEO of Nadi. Nina, where can people learn more about you and your company?
Our website is getnadi.com. So anybody can visit us there and check it out. And obviously we have all the social platforms where you can find Nadi.
Great. Wow. Thank you so much for your time today. I'm really glad that we were able to record this. I am so excited to promote the works that you're doing. Thank you.
This is very, very helpful. And thank you for the relationship.
Yes. And I want to thank our listeners for your time today. If you like this episode, please share it with a friend. Otherwise, have a great rest of your day. And we'll catch you next time on the Gooder Podcast.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. And if you haven't already, be sure to click subscribe and share with your network. Until next time, be well and do gooder.